Hello and welcome to another episode of Science Chat, the Science Communication Podcast. I'm Sean Marshall. In this episode, it's a bit of light revision on the subject of stem cell research with Dr. Stephen Sullivan of the Irish Stem Cell Foundation. I first spoke to Stephen for Science Chat after hearing him speak in Dublin's Alchemist's Cafe in 2009. And it's great to have him back on Science Chat again.
Hi, Stephen. Welcome back to Science Chat.
Hi, it's good to be back here again.
Back in the early days of this podcast, in fact, in the first episode, we spoke about the issues around the use of stem cells, in particular human embryonic stem cells in Ireland, where there's no legislation. Has there been any progress with the Irish government since we last spoke on this, or given the recession and everything, are we still where we were pretty much 15 months ago?
Well, there wouldn't be as much progress as we'd have expected, unfortunately. We're still waiting on legislation from the Department of Health and Children. At the beginning of the year, they said they were going to introduce legislation before the Oireachtas for discussion at the end of this year. And now they're starting to talk about next year. So it seems like it's floating even further away, from actually being sorted. Now, this legislation isn't some kind of academic pursuit. It's actually really, really important to being able to recruit jobs and investment to Ireland in the medical research sector over the next few years. So any delay in such research, we would be quite disappointed at the Irish Stem Cell Foundation. And I know a lot of other relevant areas such as drug screening and neuroscience are being handicapped in Ireland because we don't have good stem cell legislation. It just makes it impossible for investors to come here because it's non-transparent and you don't know if you can do the research competitively, because a large part of doing research definitively and quickly relates to how good the legislature is in that country. So, for example, Scotland has a very developed legislature pertaining to stem cells that facilitates it as being, one of the leading countries in stem cell research at the moment.
And I know you've spoken before about how this is always seen in Ireland as the human embryonic stem cell question, and they talk about the legislation from that point of view, but it's more complex than that, isn't it? Because if you're involved in stem cell research, you need to be able to decide, based on the type of treatment that you're trying to provide, what stem cells you need to use for that treatment. It's not just that we just want this particular piece of legislation because this is what we want to do.
Well, I think there's a few points. Number one, embryonic cells have been used in Ireland. Cells derived from human embryos have been used in Ireland since the 60s. So you have, for example, certain types of cells like MRC5 cells that have been used in the development of vaccines. And you also have other cells like 293 cells that are routinely used to make virus. So in essence, you've got cells that have the same ethical considerations being used, with comparatively no legislation or no regulation. And then you've got the idea that, oh, well, we need legislation for these other types of cells. Now, as far as I can see, the only difference between, the cells that are widely used in Ireland at the moment and the kind of cells that we insist we need legislation for are the embryonic stem cells are actually more powerful and useful as a research tool than the kind of cells that we arbitrarily use in labs at the moment. So, again, it would tie down to the thing that, do we want to be competitive in biomedical science? And if we do, we need the tools that are available to our international competitors. Embryonic stem cells are used or made from embryos that are left over from the IVF process and are otherwise destined for medical waste. They can make cell types that adult stem cells cannot make, and you can grow embryonic stem cells in culture, in a dish, so you can expand the number of cells that you have, which is critically important to the quality of the research. So if you start off with one embryonic stem cell, you can put it in a dish, come back in a few weeks, and you'll have millions of stem cells. With adult stem cells, you've got the problem of they don't grow very well in culture, and they don't form all cell types of the human body. So, for example, if you're interested in you know, spinal injury repair and you want to grow large numbers of neurons, or say Parkinson's disease or Alzheimer's, there you need embryonic stem cells because they can be grown to neurons and they can be grown in number in the laboratory. So really, by having a restrictive policy in stem cell research, you're ultimately undermining the initiatives that you have in to make neuroscience, Irish neuroscience, and Irish drug screening programs internationally competitive. So we feel that, you know, really this is a very strategically naive, you know, waste that we're doing, because we've already made the decision. And the longer it takes for us to develop the legislation, ultimately, the more investment and the more jobs, and the longer it'll take to produce something of international merit. You know, it'll take a long time. Because after we get the legislation in, then there's going to have to be a reappraisal of our situation, and then we're going to have to recruit back all the people that, you know, we lost because we didn't have legislation. So really, we need to move with this quickly if we're to, you know, garner the investment and the respect from the international community.
And do you think that a change in government will benefit the cause of this type of research? Do you think that, you know, it'll make it easier to get the legislation put in place when we have this almost imminent change of government that we're expecting?
Well, I think it's sad that if, you know, the change in government affects science policy nationally, because ultimately, you know, development of science policy should be a long-term pursuit. Politics is like, you know, the expression, a week is a long time in politics. Politics is very kind of ethereal. It changes a lot. You know, somebody's villain this new week will be somebody's hero by the end of the week. Research is something that requires a steadier course. So really, I think, you know, if our science policy is changing on the basis of who's in the Oireachtas, I think that's a very bad sign for Irish research, because if our policy is either stagnated or is heavily influenced by political process, then I think it'll be changing so much that it'll inherently damage the route that we take to achieving internationally competitive and definitive research.
And do you think that scientific research has suffered in the past from the type of politics that we have in Ireland? I mean, we do have a very much an opposition type of politics research. I mean, we have one government who are in, and while they're in, everybody else is saying that everything the government are doing is incorrect. And when it changes, if the new government decides to do everything that the other government have been doing, they will then say that it's incorrect. And that, to me, since I was young, to me, that's Irish politics. If you're not in government, you're in opposition, irrespective of whether it's a good policy.
In fairness, that happens in, say, the UK or the States as well. I think the problem is more acute, perhaps, in Ireland because we're smaller. I think, you know, but if Irish research, and particularly stem cell research, is to flourish in Ireland, I think there needs to be a very clear idea about where we're heading, and about, I suppose, an objective of making Irish stem cell research more reflective of the international environment. And also to realise that, you know, the way science, you know, different science sectors and different informations kind of fuse into each other in unexpected ways. So, for example, I think in some ways people have the idea that there's two pigeonholes of adult and embryonic stem cell research. And this is largely perpetrated by non-scientists who are involved in kind of some sort of fundamentalist lobby. Really, there, when you go to a stem cell conference, there is no kind of like distinction between adult or embryonic, in terms of they're just another tool by which you answer your biological question. So, you know, stem cell conferences, you know, the biggest one in the world is in Toronto next year, has adult, embryonic, and, you know, a growing population of people that actually use both. And that's like, I'm doing experiments at the moment that use adult, embryonic, and induced pluripotent stem cells all at the same time. And that's, ultimately a very powerful experiment, because if you have three types of stem cell versus one, then and they've all got sufficiently different qualities, you can actually tell a lot more about what is important in particular questions.
And what do you think that we can realistically do to change things with regard to the legislation in Ireland? I know you're a great believer in the use of patient advocacy.
Well, I think, you know, I'm a great believer in public education, because I think if people are not aware of the very, very basic facts, and you can get across the scientific facts of something very easily to someone, and they can very easily see that it's not just you saying it, that, you know, that respected scientific organizations throughout the world are saying the same thing. You can actually get across very, very non-confusingly and very definitively to people what is the reality of stem cell research. So, for example, our organization, the Irish Stem Cell Foundation, is a member of an international network called the Consortium of Stem Cell Networks. And they represent over 30 different countries around the world that are at the forefront of stem cell research and treatment. So, for example, you know, like last week, we were pointing out a clinic in Korea that was offering Irish patients treatments that scientifically we knew were nonsense. You know, and we were, you know, we put this up on the internet and we put it up on our Twitter. And then other people from Australia could see what we were saying about the science, and they could confirm that, you know, advertisements to Australian patients were also false on the basis of what we were saying about what was being directed towards Irish patients. Because I think, you know, to non-specialists, maybe all this seems very, very, very complex. But ultimately, you can always break these complex things down into simpler ideas and simpler statements. And it's just about having the patience to maybe sit down, have a look at our website, www.irishstemcellfoundation.org, and understand the basics of stem cell research. Because all stem cell types are not equivalent. They're useful in quite different ways. And it's not a question of we can just focus on one stem cell type and ignore all the others. That's a big, big mistake for Irish medical research if we continue to do that.
So the ISCF then, I mean, your main role is to produce information to be obviously to be part of this network and share information around the world, but also to produce information for the Irish public. Is that correct?
Yeah, so we've like produced a number of educational videos that are up on our website. One basically that was featured in the Frog blog this week is what are stem cells? Because I suppose people hear the word stem cells a lot in the media and they don't actually know what a stem cell is. To your listeners this afternoon, a stem cell is a specific type of cell that has two attributes to it. It can either form more stem cells, or it can form cells fated to different functions. So most cells can produce more cells like themselves. But stem cells are quite special in that they can be they can grow and produce more stem cells, but they can also grow and produce cells that are have different specializations. So for example, they can produce brain cells or heart cells or blood cells. And this is very exciting to medical researchers throughout the world, because what it means is that you can grow human tissue. And if you can grow human tissue, you can study a lot of disease, and you can study a lot about how development unfurls. And you can answer a lot of very basic questions in biology, which will eventually give rise to new treatments and new cures and production of better drugs.
Well, looking at some of the new developments in stem cell treatment that I've seen over the last month. I mean, I saw last week on New Scientist that a company called Advanced Cell Technology, they're developing a treatment for a form of hereditary blindness. And they're also applying to the FDA in the coming weeks to conduct a separate trial in age-related macular degeneration, which would be a much more common eye disease. This one affects 30 million people worldwide. Does this herald a new phase in companies producing treatments for illnesses that affect a huge number of people?
I think it represents more of a continuation. Effectively, I suppose ATC's move is significant in that it's another embryonic stem cell clinical trial. Now, it's important that listeners understand two or three different pieces of information. Number one, a clinical trial is not it's not just a seal of approval exercise. It's actually a set of very rigorously controlled experiments to see if there is a treatment, if there is an improvement, if there is something significant to transpose out into the world. So, for example, you know, when you find when somebody proposes a new treatment for a disease, there'll always be patients that will instantly believe it and they will try it. If you go on the basis of patient's emotional, opinions made in an emotional or stressed state, then you can come across a lot of very bad moves from a therapeutic point of view. So, for example, clinical trials in the West grew out of experiences like thalidomide. So thalidomide was initially marketed as a morning sickness drug. Initially looked like, it stopped the women having morning sickness. It looked very promising. And they went and they gave it to a lot of women who were pregnant. And, subsequently we found out that it had horrendous effects on, their developing fetuses and the children were born with abnormalities. So really, I suppose what clinical trials are a way of protecting the patient as much as possible, a way of objectively measuring risk versus benefit. And then ultimately, it's a kind of a blind test by which you can definitively show that the treatment is either helpful or not helpful, toxic, non-toxic, can carefully understand kind of the side effects involved in such a process. Now, I know many patients are frustrated because they read in the newspapers, clinical trials have started. And, if they don't understand what a clinical trial is, they can actually be very, very hopeful a little bit prematurely. So really, these clinical trials that are starting for age-related macular degeneration, they'll take between 6 to 7 years to complete. And at the end of it, we could have, they don't work. So people should be patient. Ultimately, I think the general public kind of don't really understand why things aren't happening quicker. And the reason things aren't happening quicker is the science involved in these kind of pursuits is actually quite complex, quite difficult. It's not like engineering where you can take, a yard of metal and bend it into a specific shape and it's done. Biology deals with living organisms and living cells. And sometimes these living cells, they won't act in a way that you'd expect or want. So, it's a little bit like trying to herd stray cats up a narrow alley. And, it's a difficult pursuit requiring a lot of thinking, a lot of forethought, and a lot of assessment of risk versus benefit for the patient. But also, it's very important that those researchers are very clear about the environment in which they work. And if there's no legislation, it makes their job 4 or 5 times harder, which in many cases can make the pursuit impossible. So we really, if we want to move forward, we want to enable researchers to find the cures and the treatments of the future and bring in investment and jobs during this difficult period of Irish history. We need to work on our legislation and we need to introduce it very quickly because the time is passing. And as the decades go by without legislation, Ireland's falling further and further behind.
Okay, well, on that note, I'd like to thank you once again, Stephen. It's always interesting to get the perspective of somebody who's actually involved in the research when we're dealing with subjects like this.
Good. Good to talk to you too, Sean. Okay. Talk to you again soon.
Well, that's it for this episode. You can find the Irish Stem Cell Foundation at www.irishstemcellfoundation.org. They're also on Twitter as Irish Stem Cell. You can find me on all the usual places from my blog at www.sciencechat.net/WordPress.